from the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
The separation of powers between the three branches of government all really hinges on and could be destroyed by the erosion of the independence of the federal judiciary.
This is your host, Scott Bertram, and that's U.S. Senator Mike Lee. His brand new book is Saving Nine, The Fight Against the Left's Audacious Plan to Pack the Supreme Court and Destroy American Liberty. We talk in depth with Senator Lee coming up. First on today's program, we're joined by Dr. Charles Steele. He is Chairman of Economics, Business, and Accounting, also Associate Professor of Economics here at Hillsdale College. Dr. Steele, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, great. Thank you, Scott.
We discussed today an essay you wrote for National Review a few months ago, nationalreview.com. The battle against big government started here. And you talk about the first meeting of the Mont Pelerin Society. So tell us, what is the Mont Pelerin Society? What happened 75 years ago this year?
The Mont Pelerin Society started out as a very small group. It was founded in the spring of 1947 by Friedrich Hayek, the great Austrian economist. And he assembled the world's leading classical liberal academics and scholars to discuss the future of liberty and the free society. He had 36 people in attendance. Now, this was post-World War II, so Nazism and fascism had been defeated. But communism dominated much of the world. And in the West, the New Deal progressivism and the administrative state were growing. They were dominating the Keynesian school of thought in macroeconomics. The idea that the government will manage the macroeconomy was dominant. Most economists thought that the socialist calculation debate, which had gone on in the 1930s, had resulted in proving that socialism works. And so these were scholars who believed that we were on an inevitable course to tyranny unless we could change direction. And so Hayek's idea was to collect the leading academics to discuss ideas to reverse the course and to defend liberty.
So why do you identify this meeting and the Mont Pelerin Society as what you call the first shot in the battle against big government?
Well, again, this is post-New Deal. It's post-World War II, Bretton Woods conference, of course, it just been completed. So the international framework was falling into place, and we were on course for a very statist kind of a framework. Now, this was a conscious attempt to advance freedom instead of statism. And I think, of course, maybe one could say that arguably the establishment of the Foundation for Economic Education, which is another organization, that was founded in spring of 1946 by Leonard E. Reed. So maybe someone could say that was the beginning of the first shot, because Reed's idea was to promote the free economy and reverse the New Deal. But the Mont Pelerin Society was an international organization, and it included very famous academics at leading institutions and was extremely influential.
What kind of conversations, what kind of discussions ended up taking place at this first meeting?
They were especially interested in discussing the current state of affairs at that time and what they might do to change it. And they actually came up with a list of six things that they thought were fundamental. And maybe the first three are worth mentioning. And the first was that they wanted to understand and explain the moral and economic origins of the crisis that they believed the Western world or the world was facing. And so they wanted to focus on what are the real problems, the intellectual problems? Secondly, they wanted to define very clearly what the proper functions of government and proper limits of government would be. And thirdly, they wanted to think about how to reestablish the rule of law instead of the rule of the administrative state.
So these days, Dr. Steele, you have a meeting like that and have those goals, and maybe you publish an essay on the Internet or post a few TED Talks on YouTube and start to get the message out. That was not available 75 years ago. So what were sort of the tangible results from the meetings? Where do we see the influence begin from what happened at this first meeting of the Mont Pelerin Society?
Well, some of the most important academics who were in attendance included people such as Milton Friedman and George Stigler from the University of Chicago, and of course, Hayek, Mises, Karl Popper, others. And what this did was it began, this blossomed into a network of pro-market academics and researchers, and their work led to establishment of such things as think tanks, policy institutes, and I think very important academic programs, which studied and promoted the idea of a free society. This work really did begin reversing many of the trends that were going on in academic economics and academic political science and policy. So we saw eventually this result in a reversal of Keynesian ideas and the idea that the government can effectively macro-manage the economy. I think this also made something I didn't mention in the essay. I think it was important for making a space for the study of public choice economics, which is the economic analysis of government decision-making, which shows that government decision-makers aren't angels who are trying to maximize the public welfare, but are human beings who operate under constraints and are trying to make themselves, obviously, maximizing their own wealth. And so if you don't have the proper constraints on government, it becomes a menace. Transaction cost economics, all kinds of things in economics were promoted, I think, by the people who had attended these conferences.
Dr. Charles Steele is with us from Hillsdale College. The essay at National Review, The Battle Against Big Government Started Here. Transition in the piece to more of a current day look at our situation, Dr. Steele, and you say, it's not a lack of ideas today, but a lack of strategy on behalf of defenders of liberty. What do you think a productive strategy might look like?
This is a great question, and maybe I should mention that some of the fruits of the Mont Pelerin meetings, really, I think that these meetings led to an environment that made people like Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher possible. And we've seen many of their ideas come to the fore in terms of policy. Now, when I talk about strategy, and you ask what would a good strategy be, I don't know. But to me, I think that the reason that we see the left and advocates of big government seem to be winning now are not because they have had more persuasive ideas, but because they've been able to infiltrate what we could call the institutional high ground, and which is sometimes called the means of cultural production and disseminating of ideas. And trying to think of a strategy to combat that is quite important. This was actually with the original statement of aims of the Mont Pelerin Society. Their third statement was that they wanted to come up with methods of reestablishing the rule of law.
Is this battle that began some 75 years ago a fight with any kind of conclusion? Will this battle for freedom and liberty essentially be continuous?
Yeah. You know, Ayn Rand, she was the novelist and writer. She observed that so long as men regard other men as prey, we are going to have conflict. And Thomas Jefferson, of course, argued that eternal vigilance is the price of liberty. I teach, of course, the history of economic thought courses at Hillsdale. And one thing I tell students is, oh, this idea, we're studying some idea. And I'll say, this idea here is then refuted and killed. But you can count on it. Ideas that are killed will always come back.
Yes.
And so we will see history repeating itself there. It's important, I think, to be dedicated, first of all, to understand the importance of liberty and the free society, and then to be dedicated to defending it. It's a perpetual thing.
Dr. Charles Steele, Chairman of Economics, Business, and Accounting, also Associate Professor of Economics at Hillsdale College. You can find this essay on the first meeting of the Mont Pelerin Society 75 years ago at nationalreview.com. The battle against big government started here. Dr. Steele, thanks so much for joining us once again here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Well, thank you so much.
Up next, Senator Mike Lee from Utah will join us. His new book is Saving Nine and the Effort to Pack the Supreme Court. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. You can get an email every time there's a new episode of the program. Go to radiohour.hillsdale.edu, click on subscribe, and enter your email address there. That's radiohour.hillsdale.edu. We're joined now by U.S. Senator Mike Lee from the great state of Utah. His brand new book is Saving Nine, The Fight Against the Left's Audacious Plan to Pack the Supreme Court and Destroy American Liberty. Senator, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you. It's good to be with you.
Before we get to the issue at hand, this issue of court packing, the book doubles as a great history of the U.S. Supreme Court and past battles. I think we should define first, and you're a guy who should have a great answer to this, what is the Supreme Court? What should we as Americans expect it to do?
Yeah, I explained this at some length in Chapter 1 of Saving Nine, which explains that the Supreme Court is there not to decide policy questions. It's there to resolve specific disputes, cases and controversies, as the Constitution describes it, that come up in the court's jurisdiction, in which people disagree as to the meaning of a particular phrase or word in a statute or a provision of the Constitution. That's their whole job. They just decide disputes. And having resolved those disputes, they then move on. The court's job is not to stop and think about how best the country could chart a better policy course for the future. That is a job left to the two political branches, the executive and legislative branch in our system. The court's sole job is just to resolve disputes and to do so objectively and independently without political influence.
You write in Saving Nine that the judicial branch is fundamentally undemocratic, sometimes even anti-democratic. In what ways do you mean that, and why does that perhaps rub people the wrong way sometimes?
Yeah, so the whole point of the court is to provide a forum, an entity, an institution that can resolve these disputes independently. And in order to do so independently, the court has to be able to not have to worry about political backlash. The whole point of having a constitution, by the way, is itself in many instances undemocratic or even anti-democratic. In fact, the whole reason we have a written constitution in one document is to limit government power and to say no matter how popular a particular policy might be, we're not as a society going to do certain things through our government. And so in order to overcome that presumption against doing them, in order to amend the constitution, that's very difficult to do. You have to get the support of two-thirds of the houses of both chambers of Congress, mm-hmm. and then you have to get three-fourths of the states to ratify any amendment to the Constitution. That is itself very undemocratic. It's anti-democratic because you're countering the majoritarian impulses of the people. That is the reason we have a Constitution. And given that the court's role sometimes involves defining the meaning of specific provisions of the Constitution, the court, therefore, in those instances, plays an undemocratic, anti-democratic role.
Senator Mike Lee with us. His new book is Saving Nine. So what about that number, Senator? The Constitution doesn't prescribe an exact number of justices for the Supreme Court. So how did we get to nine, and why does nine seem to be an appropriate number?
Yeah, so I described this at some length in Chapter 2 of Saving Nine, the fact that there's nothing in the Constitution that prescribes the number of justices. In fact, it leaves it up to Congress to decide that number. Congress can do this by statute, and Congress has exercised that power in a number of ways. But the number has bounced around throughout the history of our nation under the Constitution. It was five justices for a while. It was six for a while, went back to five, went back to six, got up to seven, went to nine. For a brief period of time, it even got up to 10 before we finally settled at the number of nine, where we have been since 1869. In all of modern history, since 1869, we have concluded as a country that it's best to leave that number alone. Because what you don't want to do is have this become a political jockeying point, a political football that lurches back and forth depending on who controls majorities in the House and the Senate and the White House. So it works well for us, and it would be one thing if people were arguing that nine justices were inadequate to perform the role of the Supreme Court. But that's not the case. This is not a human resources or a staffing problem.
Mm-hmm.
This is a political issue, that the Biden administration would very much like to manipulate.
Saving Nine is the book, The Fight Against the Left's Audacious Plan to Pack the Supreme Court and Destroy American Liberty. There is a good portion of the book, as I mentioned, which serves as a nice history of the court, back to Wilson, Taft, FDR, of course, his court-packing scheme, Justices Berger and Warren. There's a bunch of stuff here, but because our time is limited, I want to jump to, again, this current controversy about the push on the left to pack the Supreme Court, add perhaps four justices. You say this came to the limelight or came to the spotlight during this first debate between, at that point, President Donald Trump and candidate Joe Biden. Biden, who was running this campaign as a moderate, sane Democrat, he could have stopped it at its tracks. He could have said no during the debate, but he didn't. Why didn't he stop it there?
He didn't stop there in that debate because he was already recognizing that the far left elements within his own voting base in the Democratic Party were agitating for this. They were wanting it. They were upset that as many textualist originalists as Republican presidents have now put on the court are there. They don't want them there. They don't like what happens when judges and justices simply interpret the law based on what it says rather than what liberal professors wish that it meant. And so they were already pushing back, and Joe Biden, despite his earlier condemnation of court packing, was not at all inclined to stand up for the independence of the judiciary. So he hemmed and hawed and refused to commit one way or another. That was the first instance in which I started to worry that he was going to try to pack the court.
Senator Mike Lee, what is the role of the Citizens United case in this argument on the left? Essentially a political free speech Supreme Court case that the left really dislikes, the opinion handed down by the Supreme Court. Was that case in some way a trigger for this current push?
Yeah, and I believe I'll talk a little bit about this in Chapter 7 and 8 of Saving Nine. The Citizens United case, decided back in 2010, upset a lot of people on the left because it interpreted the First Amendment so as to say that the government can't prohibit someone from airing a movie about a particular candidate. In that case, it was a movie about Hillary Clinton. That is what the First Amendment is all about. The free speech clause and protections for the press in the First Amendment prohibit that. The left doesn't like that because the left very much wants the government to be able to control who says what in an election year environment. That, alas, is prohibited by the First Amendment. And they don't like that. That bothers them. And so it's one of the things that's pushing them to want to pack the court.
Senator, let's hold on there for a moment. U.S. Senator Mike Lee with us. His new book, Saving Nine, The Fight Against the Left's Audacious Plan to Pack the Supreme Court and Destroy American Liberty. More with him next. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Common Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide three delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
What does great pizza and ice-cold beer have in common? Charlus Tap House and mobile catering, of course. Charlus Pizza, pasta, and more made from scratch with old family recipes using only the finest ingredients. Charlus will not disappoint when you bite into the bacon spicy mambo pizza. Get ready for an experience you won't find anywhere else. Call Charlus today to book their patio for your next birthday, baby shower, anniversary, or any other private party. Remember, everything is homemade using secret family recipes. Be sure to try their famous sundial steak salad with perfect grilled steak tossed in their homemade tomato vinaigrette dressing. Charlus Tap House, your ultimate beer experience. Charlus Tap House rule number one, come for the homemade pizza, stay for the beer wall. Charlus Tap House rule number two, never stay empty-handed. Charlus Tap House and mobile catering in two locations, Anderson Outlets and in Reading at the corner of Shasta and East Streets. Charlus Tap House for dine-in, takeout, or delivery. Ask about booking their patio for your next private event. Charlus Tap House, bringing family and friends together.
Hi friends, this is RC with Tobacco and Brew. This month's cigar of the humidor is Jaime Garcia Reserva Especial. Using only the finest dark, oily broadleaf Maduro wrappers paired with a rich blend of Nicaraguan long filler tobaccos, this is a stick on the full side. An effortless draw brings out the wonderfully layered notes of espresso, black pepper, and cedar. Jaime Garcia Reserva Especial. Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Common Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide three delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
A building that's meant to last is not built overnight. And for centuries, the cornerstone has been crucial to guide each brick and wall that comes after. A strong community relies on many cornerstones. So at Cornerstone Community Bank, we've taken our name to heart. Whether it's your business or your family, we'll provide the financial cornerstone that you need to build on. We're local. We're community. We're your cornerstone. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Every Monday from 6 to 8 p.m., join us at Radio Wasteland, your local guide to the unexplained and the unknown. Each week, we cover all things unexplained, from the moving stars in the sky to the things that go bump in the night. Visit us as we explore these topics and more as our in-studio team digs deeper with featured guests and listener call-ins. Mondays are rough, but now your overworked brain has a chance for some sweet relief with Radio Wasteland.
Radio Wasteland, Mondays at 6 on KCNR.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We've been talking with U.S. Senator Mike Lee. His new book is Saving Nine, The Fight Against the Left's Audacious Plan to Pack the Supreme Court and Destroy American Liberty. Senator, we were discussing before the break this new push to expand the court, to pack the court. You describe this effort by Brian Fallon, a former Hillary Clinton advisor, sort of organizing and taking this argument, taking this push to pack the court, very, very public. As you read Saving Nine, you realize many past efforts to pack the court, even specifically FDR's push, was somewhat private, somewhat behind closed doors. It didn't play out in the press day after day. Why do you think there was a strategy change this time around?
Well, this time around, I think that what happened was saw that President Trump had made three appointments to the Supreme Court of the United States. And I think Democrats saw all of a sudden that Roe versus Wade, which has become something of a sacrament, something of a holy grail on the left, was on the line. It was on the line not because you had activist Republican appointees trying to make that happen, rather because Roe versus Wade itself was a figment of Harry Blackmun's own imagination. Roe versus Wade itself finds no grounding in the text, structure, history, tradition of the Constitution. It was pulled out of thin air, as it were, and thrust on the country. And as I explained in Saving Nine, there's nothing in the Constitution that makes abortion a federal issue at all, much less a federal issue that can be decided only by nine justices wearing black robes. So they saw that that was coming. They saw that there were justices now on the court, enough of them to say, this is silly. This hasn't proven workable, setting aside the fact that Roe from the outset was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't want to lose. And so that's why they started agitating for packing the court. Now, I had hoped that President Biden might distance himself from that. We started seeing that in his first presidential debate in 2020. I had hoped that after that he might either forget about it or decide it wasn't worth the effort. But then when he put together, at the urging of Demand Justice and people like Brian Fallon, this entity to study court packing,
mm-hmm.
and when that entity, that commission, concluded with something that did not reject the idea
yes.
of court packing, I knew we were in trouble.
So, Senator, when you say in the book the stage has been set for an invasion of the Supreme Court, is that what you're referring to, this commission that came forward and was put together and did not, you know, explicitly reject the argument? The fact you have a sitting U.S. Senator like Elizabeth Warren very strongly in favor, advocating for this court packing, is that what you mean by the stage being set?
Yeah, so no single one of those elements set the stage. But when you add all of them together, they do, together with the fact that now in the wake of Justice Alito's recent leaked draft majority opinion in the Dobbs case, a majority opinion that's masterfully written and that I encourage every American, regardless of where they stand on the abortion issue, to read because of its instructive value, because of its quality in its writing and its and the strength of its reasoning. All of these things have inflamed the left to the point now where they're pioneering buzz phrases like hashtag expand the court,
mm-hmm.
which Elizabeth Warren has been pushing in the last few weeks. All of these things are setting the stage for this invasion of the court, an invasion of the court brought about by proposed legislation threatening to pack the court and thereby offset and throw off its independence.
U.S. Senator Mike Lee is with us. His new book, Saving Nine, The Fight Against the Left's Audacious Plan to Pack the Supreme Court and Destroy American Liberty. So what is at stake? You say it is, in fact, the structure of the Constitution itself that is put in peril by this plot to expand the court. Why?
Yeah, there's some interesting oddities, some interesting ironies here. Packing the Supreme Court is itself not unconstitutional. The Constitution allows that to happen because it gives Congress this discretion. But ironically, by doing that, even though it has the power to do that, even though Congress can, that doesn't mean that it should. And I strongly believe that it should not. Because by taking this particular step, you would throw off the court's ability to operate neutrally, objectively, and even-handedly. Every time you saw a shift in power, where the majorities in both houses of Congress and control of the White House shifts from one party to the other, you'd see a corresponding increase by at least four Supreme Court justices. Eventually, it'd probably be more than that. And little by little, you'd see the court turning away from being this neutral, objective, adjudicative body and starting to resemble a more political body, one that would almost start to resemble the intergalactic Senate portrayed in the Star Wars movies.
You say that this is an effort to rob a branch of power and grab it for themselves. Is this also just an explicit attack on the separation of powers as laid out in the Constitution?
Yes, it is exactly that. Because the separation of powers between the three branches of government all really hinges on and could be destroyed by the erosion of the independence of the federal judiciary. The courts are not going to be independent if they become a political football. And I don't think we've never seen this kind of lurch before, this such a blatant and blatantly partisan attempt to influence the political orientation of the court, at least not since 1937, when FDR last attempted this. But as I explained in 79, even though that effort failed legislatively, it left a mark, and it's an ugly one, one for which the American people are still paying for in ways that I describe in the book.
Senator, we have just another minute or two. You mentioned earlier, we talked about Citizens United being one of the triggers for this push. As of the time that we talk and as of the time the book is being released, we don't have the decision released officially, handed down the opinion on the Dobbs case to overturn Roe v. Wade. Do you worry that that is the specific ruling, the specific case from the Supreme Court that is going to energize and going to make this push from the left a reality?
Oh, absolutely. That is, I think, likely to be the match, the fuse, what triggers all of this. And I talk a lot about this in Chapter 9 of Saving 9. I even tell the story of a moment when I was 11 years old when my father was serving as Solicitor General of the United States. I was home alone one Saturday morning when pro-abortion protesters showed up at my home to protest against a brief that my dad had submitted in an abortion case in which he was trying to protect the authority of governments, including states, to protect the unborn. They showed up and went out and talked to them. And the woman who appeared to be in charge, first words she said to me were, "Hello, little boy, we're not here to hurt you." And, you know, it's interesting. The more things change, the more they stay the same.
Yeah.
Some 40 years later, they're showing up to the private residences of Supreme Court justices, where some of them still have young children they're raising. They send this message loud and clear, a message that, separate and apart from whatever words they utter that day, they send the message, "We know where you sleep." They're doing that here again today. They're threatening them by showing up at their homes, and they're threatening them by promising to change the composition of the court.
U.S. Senator Mike Lee, the brand new book, Saving Nine, The Fight Against the Left's Audacious Plan to Pack the Supreme Court and Destroy American Liberty. Senator, thank you so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you.
Just a moment here to say hello and thank you to our listeners in Vero Beach, Florida, on News Radio WTTB, 105.7 FM and 1490 AM. Thank you for listening to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Up next, we're joined by Christopher Bush from Hillsdale's English Department to start a series on Willa Cather. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Hey, KCNR listeners, it's Nathan with the Reading Civic Auditorium. Have you been to ReadingCivic.com lately? I want to shout out huge thanks to all of our patrons throughout the North State who buy tickets to our shows and attend the valuable community events that happen in the auditorium every year. These past 10 years of momentum have been absolutely incredible. Thanks to all of you. Your support and confidence in Advanced Reading has made the impossible possible. As a community who knows how to pull together and show ourselves strong, we have successfully attracted high-quality entertainers and major concert promoters back into the building and put your Reading Civic Auditorium on the map once again. Arts and entertainment culture is thriving, and we have much to celebrate. Never miss a show again. Visit ReadingCivic.com and sign up for our emails for exclusive pre-sale access. We have an unbelievable lineup with new shows being added all the time. Hit ReadingCivic.com today. You'll be glad you did. Shows are always more fun at the Civic.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6:05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6:05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
North State Relief, a nonprofit serving Northern California communities, is raising awareness that there are free financial counseling services available to North State residents, provided by certified counselors at Balance Pro. They offer free HUD certified financial counseling for debt, rental, and mortgage assistance, student loans, and financial counseling for veterans and fire victims. Get advice from the pros at balancepro.org or by calling 1-800-777-PLAN. That's 1-800-777-7526.
If you trust the government, if you believe the misinformation they're telling you is fact, you won't like our show, Poke the Hornet's Nest.
Hi, I'm your host, Doug Janke, and along with co-host Nick Gardner, we'll expose the dark side of governmental deception and misinformation from our local level, statewide, and to the national and world views.
On second thought, maybe the government believers should listen to the view of two middle-class, well-informed, working Americans.
Be sure to tune in to Poke the Hornet's Nest every other Sunday right here on KCNR1460.com, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, 8 to 9 every other Sunday morning.
And remember, you don't have to believe the artificial intelligence these people with college degrees are telling you, because sometimes they're misleading you. Listen to the other side of the news.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6:05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6:05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
KCNR invites you to join us the second Friday of the month, starting at 8 a.m., for the Gorman Law Hour, featuring local attorney Patrick Gorman, a legal expert when it comes to injured workers, compensation claims, and employee claims. So, if you have a legal question or just wonder whether or not you have a legal issue or problem, talk to Patrick Gorman, attorney at law, during the Gorman Law Hour, starting at 8 a.m. the second Friday of the month on KCNR.
Hi, Bob the Cop here. The other day I had a close encounter with my friends from Mars. I visited them a few years back, and they discovered the great taste of Mount Shasta spring water. Well, I guess they ran out, so they came back to Earth to get some more. I reminded them it comes from a protected spring at the base of Mount Shasta, and it's bottled at the source. I guess they just didn't get the part about us delivering right to your door. Have your own close encounter by calling 1-800-922-6227 to get some of the best tasting water in the galaxy. Pure and simple, naturally, the best Mount Shasta spring water.
Now is a great time to prepare for this year's upcoming wildfire season. Reading Electric Utility and City of Reading staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risks to our facilities and to the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home, clear debris from your roof and gutters, and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity of power lines, call 530-224-4356. We all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. For more information about Hillsdale College for prospective students, for alumni, or friends of Hillsdale, head over to hillsdale.edu. We're joined now by Dr. Christopher Bush, Professor of English at Hillsdale College. Dr. Bush, thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here, Scott.
And we'll start a mini-series here, a three-part series on the background, the life, the work of Willa Cather. For those who don't know who she is, or perhaps only know a little, Dr. Bush, what should we know up front about Willa Cather?
Well, the first thing, Scott, is that she's an American novelist, short story writer, poet, and essayist, one of our best, I think. She was born in 1873 in Virginia, died in 1947 in New York City, where she lived for about 30 years. She was the winner of the Pulitzer Prize in 1923 for her novel One of Ours. And her masterpieces are My Antonia, published in 1918, and Death Comes for the Archbishop, published in 1927. She's probably best known for her Nebraska novels. She has several Nebraska novels, and also for her interest in the Southwest, especially the cliff dwellers who lived in Arizona, New Mexico, and Colorado.
We'll spend our time in this particular conversation talking about more of her early work, her early stories, and her early life, too. She was born in Virginia. She moves to Nebraska at the age of 9. You mentioned she has a series of novels called The Nebraska Novels, so that probably altered her path a little bit, that move.
It did. Her originally, her grandparents were the first to move to Nebraska, and then her uncle and his family moved, and shortly thereafter, her parents decided to move as well. And so it was a huge change for her. In her novel My Antonia, which is semi-autobiographical, she talks about how the character that she describes just felt kind of blotted out and erased, that the landscape was so huge and so vast and just a brand new experience for her, and had a tremendous impact on her writing.
And so while she's in college, perhaps even, she has this piece published unknowingly in the Nebraska State Journal. Does that fuel her decision to continue her writing?
Absolutely. She after high school, she went into kind of a preparatory program prior to matriculating at the University of Nebraska. And she started out at University of Nebraska. She wanted to be a physician. And then she, one of her professors, submitted an essay on Carlyle for publication, and she says she was just absolutely mesmerized by seeing her name and her work in print, and so that had a major impact on her, and she later switched her major to English.
Talking with Dr. Christopher Bush, a professor of English here at Hillsdale College, about Willa Cather. So what was her writing like when she was starting out?
When she first started, I guess I would say that the seeds of her later work are apparent in some of the very, very early stories. And so in some of her early writing, you'll see a great interest in classical themes and mythology. Sometimes, it's really maybe not exactly her authentic voice, but kind of echoing some of the things that she's read. She always admired the writer Henry James. And so there was sometimes a kind of Jamesian quality, I suppose, to her writing. So, but even in the very early, a book of poems, April Twilights, there are some poems there that you could read them and say, yes, this is Willa Cather. I recognize her interests. Some really, really beautiful poems in there.
I want to get to April Twilights, and I think you have an excerpt or two that you might want to share.
Yes.
But before we do, she was a journalist, too, starting out.
Yes.
As a writer. And you were telling me off here, she had a sharp tone, a sharp pen at times.
She did.
As a critic.
Yes, she did. She did a lot of drama reviews. She would go see plays and music performances and review them. So she was, she could be a very sharp-penned critic. And, she started out early in her life. She was she did work for some publications, one called The Home Monthly. She was also extremely involved in kind of what we might call, political writing. She was managing editor of McClure's magazine in Pittsburgh. She was also a high school English teacher, and she also published a number of things in the magazines that she worked for as an editor. So a lot of I guess you could say kind of preliminary work before she actually got started in her work as a writer, as an artist.
So Willa Cather's first book of poetry is April Twilights. That's released in 1903. And then in 1905, there's also a series of short stories called The Troll Garden that was published. April Twilights specifically, this book of poetry from 1903, how does that hold up? And as I said, I know you have a few excerpts to share that we can hear her write it.
April Twilights is, as you said, Scott, a book of poems published in 1903. And it was subsequently revised. She revised it in 1923, about 20 years later, and then again in 1933. And she took some poems out and then added new poems. But there's a poem here from the original publication. It's a short poem. I'd just like to read it. And you'll be able to hear the Willa Cather that we know better from her later work in just these few lines. It's called Prairie Dawn, and it begins, "A crimson fire that vanquishes the stars, a pungent odor from the dusty sage, a sudden stirring of the huddled herds, a breaking of the distant tablelands, through purple mists ascending, and the flare of water ditches silver in the light, a swift, bright lance hurled low across the world, a sudden sickness for the hills of home." And that is Prairie Dawn by Willa Cather.
If we look at these early works, are they appreciated by an audience or critics? Are they finding their place in the literary world this early on?
What's interesting, Scott, is that if we look at her early fiction, the collection, The Troll Garden, some of the stories in that collection are the ones that you'll find in anthologies today. For example, there's one called The Sculptor's Funeral, another called A Wagner Matinee, and a third story called Paul's Case. And what's significant really about, especially The Sculptor's Funeral and A Wagner Matinee, is that they deal with the subject, one of the several subjects that was probably closest to her heart, and that was the idea of art. You know, what is art? And she really thought of herself as an artist. She took a great deal of interest not only obviously in writing and editing her books, but also in the physical production of the book. She was very interested in, you know, the typeface and the illustrations, and she said she did not want to become a portable. She wanted to make sure that all of her work was to the highest artistic standard, really. So, but I think one of the things that's interesting about these early works is we see her interest in art. We see her her concern, I guess you could say, about whether the America of her time was a fertile ground for artists. And The Sculptor's Funeral is one which tells a story of a sculptor who has passed away and comes back to his town and is just perhaps not appreciated for being the great sculptor that he is.
Dr. Christopher Bush, professor of English at Hillsdale College, as we begin a series on Willa Cather. Dr. Bush, thanks for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you, Scott.
That will do it for this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Dr. Charles Steele from Hillsdale's Economics Department, telling us about where and when the first shot in the battle against big government was fired. U.S. Senator Mike Lee joined us. His brand new book, Saving Nine, The Fight Against the Left's Audacious Plan to Pack the Supreme Court and Destroy American Liberty. And we heard from Dr. Christopher Bush beginning his series on Willa Cather. You can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, or Amazon Podcasts, also iHeart. Search for The Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Follow us on Twitter at Hillsdale Radio and find us on Facebook. Email the show at radiohour@hillsdale.edu. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been The Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Why choose proven quality sleep from Sleep Number? Because our Sleep Number 360 smart bed is really smart. It senses your movement and automatically adjusts to help keep you both comfortable. Plus, it's temperature balancing, so you stay cool. It's even smart enough to know exactly how long, how well, and when you slept. And to help you get almost 30 minutes more restful sleep per night. Sleep Number takes care of the science. All you have to do is sleep. Don't miss our 4th of July special. The Queen Sleep Number 360 C2 smart bed is only $8.99. Plus, free home delivery when you add a base. Ends Monday. To learn more, go to sleepnumber.com.
North State Now is a magazine formatted show that airs at 6 p.m. on Thursday evenings right here on KCNR at 6 p.m. Here's the lineup. The first Thursday is yours truly, Linda Bott, covering film, theater, and what's happening in the North State. The second Thursday is Heroes of the North State with your host, Michelle Slade. The third Thursday is Enjoy the Magazine and Store with your hosts, James Masada and Rhonda Alvey. The fourth Thursday is a new show called Man Up with Ted Leidy and Carl Bott. That's North State Now every Thursday night right here on KCNR, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio. Brought to you by ReddingCivic.com, Axiom Repertory Theater, Charlou's Tap House, Umbrella Marketing, and Tobacco and Brew.
The official meeting of the business-to-business meeting is called to order. Business-to-business, where we always say, make every transaction a win-win-win. Our guest today is Steve Clark from Minuteman Press of Reading.
Today I'd like to talk to you about business cards.
I just get mine from this.
Don't say it. Don't do it. If you're thinking of ordering your business cards online, don't do it. Keep your business local.
But they're cheaper online.
No, business cards from Minuteman Press of Reading start at just $35, and custom design services start at $29, and you keep your money local.
Hey, that's a win!
Let us at Minuteman Press of Reading take care of your business cards. Rapid turnaround time and priced right. We also do full-service direct mail and promotional products at Minuteman Press of Reading.
Call 221-0400. That's 221-0400.
For Minuteman Press of Reading, where we design, print, and promote you.
221-0400. That's 221-0400.
Minuteman Press of Reading. Call today.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. Although Coachmaster is recognized as the authority and specialist in frame and suspension, we are primarily your auto body and truck collision repair center. This includes all vehicles, Lexus, Honda, or pickup trucks. Our technicians are highly trained and have the most advanced equipment to ensure a complete and quality repair. With our knowledge and the insurance claim process, all we need is your claim number to handle your claim. Coachmaster has a great working relationship with all insurance companies. This ensures a complete repair with quality parts and a delay-free process. At Coachmaster, in our 50 years in business, we've experienced almost every situation imaginable in a claim. This experience and personal dedication to the repair of your vehicle sets Coachmaster apart from all other choices. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
Retirement may seem to be in the distant future, or it may suddenly arrive overnight. At Stifel Investments, we are committed to working closely with our clients. Planning tomorrow means understanding the challenges of today. Uncertain markets, rising costs, and longer lifespans. As a financial advisor of 25 years, I'm committed to helping my clients achieve retirement success. Let's get started today. This is Susan Eastman, Stifel Nicholas & Company, 244-7199.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to